the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
You're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, something, everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done. How can we stand by while this all takes place? Stop this inhuman race. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise in defense of Mother Earth. Earth.
And welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Each week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news, you'll hear about corporations, government agencies, and people who are killing the planet, and folks who have the detailed information about saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email, or web addresses, so please get a pencil or a pen and some recycled paper to write down the information, because this isn't couch potato radio. It's activist radio, and I'm asking you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, and making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods, up in a tripod or a tree sit, or locked down in that dragon at the road blockade. If you do have information, news, comments, or announcements for Earth First Radio, please keep your pencil handy and listen for the contact information. Coming up in the latter half of the show, I'd like to welcome you folks out on the unbrokenchain.net tonight. Thank you for tuning in. Let's start off with announcements. As you may know, the Forest Service has issued a notice for public comment on the roadless area rule. While we believe the public has already spoken on this matter, when the agency held over 600 meetings and recorded 1.6 million comments on the issue, we nevertheless must make our voices heard again. It is critical that we flood the Forest Service with comments in support of protecting roadless areas. Comments must be received by September 10th. Call the United States, and you can send your comments to USDA Forest Service CAAT, attention roadless ANPR. That's USDA Forest Service CAT, attention roadless ANPR, at P.O. Box 221090, Salt Lake City, Utah, 84122. I'll read that all one more time. USDA Forest Service CAT, attention roadless ANPR, P.O. Box 221090, Salt Lake City, Utah, 84122. And if you'd like more information about the roadless area rule or some sample letters to send to the Forest Service, go to the following website, www.americanlands.org. That's www.americanlands.org. Here's an action alert. Help is urgently needed in the Slocan Valley of British Columbia. Slocan Forest Products is hacking logging roads into the last remaining watersheds and opening up a major wildlife corridor to industrial logging. Local residents are putting themselves in front of the machines and chainsaws to prevent the continued road building. Last year, blockades were successfully set up on Trozo Creek Road in Perry Siding and slowed Silicon Forest Products down enough that they were unable to log the 15,000 cubic meters of trees as planned over the winter. This new road is at the north end of the Perry Siding and will, if built, join up with the partially built Trozo Road at the south end. This will open the entire ridge up to industrial logging, resulting in serious damage to the watersheds and major loss of wildlife corridor, habitat, and winter grazing lands. We're on the road now from 5 a.m. to 5 p.m., and they need help. Check in at the office at the Spicer Center in Winlaw, British Columbia. That's in the heart of the Slocan Valley. For more information about the Peace Camp, to get protest sites and other information, if you're on the web, you can find a map of the Friends of Elaho Peace Camp at Elaho, that's E-L-A-H-O .tao.ca .elahomap.gif. Once again, there's no triple W in this one, so it's just Elaho, E-L-A-H-O .tao.ca /elahomap.gif. And if you're in Vancouver, British Columbia, you can go to the Friends of the Elaho meetings every Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. They meet at 303 West Hastings, number 301 in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And if you want to give them a call, it's 604-255-4145. That's 604-255-4145. And once again, their weekly meeting every Tuesday evening at 303 West Hastings, number 301 in Vancouver. If you're in the Portland area, there's a bark hike. The bark hikes are kind of fun. They leave from Portland, Oregon on the second Sunday of each month, and that's September 9th. That's coming up in just a week or so. If you want more information about the bark hike, you can call Greg Dyson of Bark, 503-331-0374. That's 503-331-0374. If you're on the web, it's www.bark-out.org. www.bark-out.org. Go on a bark hike. Here's the latest from the good folks in the Matoll. Uncle Dennis hopes they find lots of forest activists to work with them. Looks like they will need the help. A Humboldt County judge has just approved Timber Harvest Plan 00-020. So we need people to fill the forest. Come one, come all. On Monday, August 27th, the Humboldt County judge passed his ruling on THP 00-020, giving the Maxam Corporation the go-ahead to log yet another old grove of old-growth Douglas fir trees in the Matoll River watershed, known as the Matoll Free State by the local activist community. Activists have been occupying the Matoll Free State since October of last year, and now another influx of activists is needed to help defend these old-growth firs. We still have visions of packing the forest with hundreds, even thousands of people, and we have the support network to feed as many people as we can get. So come on out, get out of the cities, try some good nonviolent forest activism. Also coming up, the Judy Berry trial versus the FBI and the Oakland Police Department will be beginning in about a month on October 1st, in federal court in Oakland, California. And a couple of weeks later, the Gypsy trial on October 15th, also in the Oakland federal courtrooms. So come on out for that, too, and then get a ride back to Humboldt County to the Matoll Free State. Further information can be obtained from North Coast Earth First, P.O. Box 28, Arcata, California, 95518. That address, North Coast Earth First, P.O. Box 28, Arcata, California, 95518. Or if you want to give them a call, it's 707-825-6598. That's 707-825-6598. Those folks need help in the Matoll. Moving into Oregon, forest defenders take to the trees at the Slap Timber Sale. Several local activists associated with Cascadia Forest Defenders concerned that the Forest Service is not adequately defending the rare red tree vole and its habitat have established a new tree sit at the Slap Timber Sale. The sale is in the Middle Fork Ranger District of the Willamette National Forest, southeast of Hills Creek Reservoir. Activists are protesting the sale of old-growth trees and have erected a tree sit in order to defend the red tree vole nest that activists and tree climbers have discovered at the sale. The platform was placed about 170 feet up in the air in the canopy of an old-growth, large, really big Douglas fir tree in Unit 21 of the Slap Timber Sale. It's not just the spotted owl, it's not just the salmon, it's the whole forest and all creatures, great and small, that make up the forest we love, said Peregrine of the Cascadia Forest Defenders. The timber sale includes several massive old-growth trees ranging from 5 to 700 years old or more. There have been numerous sightings by the activists of bear, cougar, rare butterflies, spotted owls, pileated woodpeckers, and many small mammals. Several deer also use the unit areas for their homes. The hills surrounding the timber sale are spotted with clear cuts, which is a sad reminder of the imminent danger that this brilliant ecosystem faces. Peregrine says she plans on staying at Slap until the forest is permanently saved. The activists are also demanding that Alan Ford, the president and owner of Roseburg Forest Products, the purchaser of this sale, refuse this and all other old-growth sales. The Slap Timber Sale was offered to Ford as part of the replacement volume program in order to replace a sale that was sold to him in the Suislaw National Forest and subsequently canceled due to nesting marbled merlets, a rare coastal bird. The forests now scheduled for logging are critical to the survival of other rare species, including spotted owls and red tree voles. As a result, replacement volume is an endangered species shell game, buying time for one species at the expense of another. Other Cascadia sales are the replacement volume are North Winbury and East Devil in the Willamette National Forest, Peak and Silver Sturgis in the Rogue River National Forest, Blodgett in the Umpqua National Forest, all of which have been given to Alan Ford. Mr. Ford is also the chairman of the Umpqua Bank, target of a recent boycott because of his association with forest destruction. The Slap Timber sale encompasses about 65 acres of old growth and mature forest and will clear cut 4.5 million board feet if the sale is not stopped. Cascadia Forest defenders demand the Forest Service do the right thing and protect the red tree vole habitat. The red tree vole is a small mammal that lives its entire life in the canopy of old-growth Douglas fir and is a prey species for the spotted owl. The Forest Service is required to survey for rare voles and protect trees with active nests under the survey and manage protocols of the Northwest Forest Plan. Although small portions of the timber sale units were set aside for the voles, activists have found several more active nests and want them all protected. The Cascadia Forest Defenders is a group of volunteer activists dedicated to stopping forest destruction through a variety of direct action tactics. The group has been actively protesting against several other sales in the Cascadia bioregion for several years. Current tree sits have been ongoing for 3 years at the Clark, Fall Creek, North Windberry timber sales. The group decided to step up their efforts when the Middle Fork Ranger District released a priority list of sales that would be ready to cut this season, including Slap, Clark, North Windberry, East Devil, and one sale Rhodey, which was cut earlier this summer. There are thousands of acres of old-growth trees on the chopping block all over Cascadia, and the activists vow to do all they can to protect these old-growth ecosystems from chainsaws. If you want more information, contact the Cascadia Forest Defenders. Their number 541-684-8977. That's Cascadia Forest Defenders, 541-684-8977. Moving to France, no way, says Jose. Wielding scythes and shears, hundreds of protesters hacked down two test fields of genetically engineered corn in southeast France last week. The incident was the fifth such protest against biotech foods in France since late June. José Bovet, a French farmer who is one of the world's leading anti-globalization activists, has called for a campaign of civil disobedience unless the French government orders the destruction of all test plots of biotech crops. French Environment Minister Yvette Crochet has condemned the attacks while acknowledging that the concerns motivating them are legitimate. Worldwide, consumer support for genetically engineered foods is low, but the industry has convinced most governments to back its products, reports the London Guardian. And Scottish mothers risk arrest in genetically modified crop protest, in this story by Les Barker and Sarah Bruce of the Aberdeen Press and Journal. Mothers with young children protesting against GM crops risked arrest by taking physical measures to stop controversial trials on a Highland farm in Scotland. With police reinforcements on their way to Rosekill Farm on Black Isle, one young mother stood in front of the tractor grinding work to a halt, at least for the night. No arrests were made immediately, but protesters vowed that he would do whatever it took to stop the work. The tractor, believed to be planting GM oilseed rape or canola on the controversial site, had been moving at about the field since yesterday morning, and until tea time, protesters, who had been alerted to the site by the Press and Journal's front page coverage yesterday morning, could only look on in frustration. But when the driver tried to return to the field after his meal break at about 6 p.m., protesters blocked the road with cars and bodies to prevent him from getting back to the much-publicized field a mile from the village of Munlochy. Katrinia, a mother of two who stopped the tractor, described the standoff between the 10 protesters, police, and the man believed to be the farm owner, Jamie Grant, in the middle of the field. She said police are at the moment asking us if we have any plans and we're actually there as an organized group. However, we told them we've never met before, we have no specific plans, we're just stopping the crop being planted. She added, I've no idea how long we'll be here, but obviously the police want to bring it to a head. Explaining her personal reasons for coming from Gorthlech to the field, she said, It's the kids' world, but they don't know what's going on here, so we have to do it for them. The tractor driver allegedly threw protesters off the scent earlier in the day, telling them that he was only laying fertilizer and not planting seeds. But two protesters went to investigate for themselves. Nancy from the Black Isle said they found purple-coated seeds lying in the field. Although the purpose of the work is not entirely clear, the tractor was pulling a seed drill behind it. It is understood that black seeds with a purple coating, the type that were found by protesters, could be a winter crop of canola with some kind of anti-rotting agent on them. Mr. Grant was unavailable for comment. The executive officially gave the green light for genetically modified canola to be planted on the site. Nancy said, We came here because we've seen the article in the Press and Journal saying that they've got the go-ahead just to give some support. We're so disappointed that the go-ahead has been given. Seven or eight cars and motorbikes, some covered with anti-GM posters and a placard with lies, more lies, and GM on it, were parked in the turnout opposite the site. Next to them sat the telltale signs of a police van and a 4x4 vehicle. Surveying the scene, Highlands and Islands GM Concern campaign coordinator Bill Smith said, "I've just come along to find out firsthand what's happening here this evening. This is what happens when democracy fails. People have to turn to whatever course of action it requires, and this is it." The protesters' delaying tactics seemed to have worked as the tractor drove away from the field ostensibly for the night. Police were also leaving the scene, and protesters had nothing but praise for their conduct at the site. Sean said, "Police have been fantastic and really impartial. They've been here listening to us for hours." And moving to the Philippines, 800 protesters uproot BT corn in Mindanao. About 800 farmers, church people, and students and other members of civil society group bravely stormed Monsanto's experimental field in the southern Philippines, uprooting all the BT corn plants. The Operation Buno, or Uproot, took only 5 to 10 minutes, leaving two police officers helpless. No untoward incident happened. "Faster, faster," were the shouts as the protesters hurriedly uprooted the genetically engineered corn in the 1,700-square-meter experimental field of Monsanto's AgroSeed in Maltana Village, Tamapacan town of South Cotabato Province, Mindanao. About 100 indigenous Lumads also took part in the protest action, the first of its kind in the country's history of genetically modified organism protests. AgroSeed is currently conducting a multi-location open field testing of BT corn in and around 30 sites in Luzon and Mindanao, and cries of protest from several sectors of the country. In 1999, Monsanto ignored the multi-sectoral opposition, including a series of city council resolutions in General Santos City in Mindanao, and pushed through with the first open field experiments of genetically engineered crops in that country. BT corn contains a gene from a soil bacterium, Bacillus thuringiensis, a toxin that makes this transgenic crop produce its own insecticide to beat off corn borers. Unfortunately, those insecticides will produce tolerance in the corn borers, and a superbug will be produced. Let's move to the Galapagos Islands. August 28th, the Sea Shepherd alert. "We are in the midst of a very curious standoff. We arrived in the Galapagos with the Ocean Warrior on August 24th for the purpose of resupplying our ship Serenian and to bring contributions to the Galapagos National Park. Our greeting upon arrival was overwhelmingly positive. Hundreds of people from the National Parks Office, the Darwin Research Station, and the community of Puerto Ayora came out in small boats to welcome us as we dropped our anchor. Banners supporting Sea Shepherd were hanging all over town, and the mayor of Puerto Ayora met with us, promised us his support, and presented us with the flag of Santa Cruz." That's the Galapagos Islands city. On the first day, hundreds of children came out to visit the ship. During a visit by about 50 Boy Scouts, the port captain arrived to tell us that we would not be allowed to put our boats in the water. On August 25th, the next day, the port captain said the Sea Shepherd crew could not use the local water taxis to go ashore either. When the National Park came out with boats to transport us, the port captain retaliated by ordering all Ocean Warrior crew confined to the ship. The Guayaquil, a large Ecuadorian warship equipped with Exocet missiles, steamed into the harbor at full speed and cruised by us very close before dropping anchor beside us. On August 26th, the port captain set out armed guards to refuse all visitors to the ship except National Park Rangers. The next day, all the Ecuadorian newspapers carried features on Ocean Warrior's arrival in the Galapagos. They quoted me as saying, "It appears that Ecuador has the ships, the helicopters, and the manpower to protect the Galapagos Islands. They just lack the political will to do so." In response, the Navy sent in a second gunboat to guard us. All of this is happening because Sean O'Hearn, our Director of Operations in the Galapagos, has openly and quite rightly accused Admiral Vega, the second highest ranking admiral in the Ecuadorian Navy, of corruption. His accusation was investigated and verified by a government committee on corruption. The result? No consequences to the admiral other than some slight embarrassment, and he has become very angry with the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. Thus, the Ocean Warrior sits at anchor in the Galapagos under virtual house arrest. On shore, students, members of the community, and rangers from the national park are protesting and organizing marches against the Navy. Many thanks are due to those who have already contacted the Ecuadorian government officials with their concerns. The flood of phone calls, emails, and faxes to various Ecuadorian embassies immediately produced a slight relaxation limitation on the provisions of detention placed upon our crew. We hope this trend will continue, as we will need to see a positive response to permit requests and authorization for a change of status in order to remain. Why is this happening? The answer is that since the arrival of the Sea Shepherd's ship Serenian into the Galapagos in December of 2000, a major assault has been underway against illegal fishing in the Galapagos Islands. The Serenian was the first ship on the scene of the tanker Jessica's oil spill last January. For over a month, Sea Shepherd volunteers worked with the national park to clean up the oil and rescue birds, sea lions, and marine iguanas. It took 3 months for permission to be granted to the national park to allow the Serenian to officially patrol in the marine reserve. In March, Sean O'Hearn on board the Serenian reported their first encounter. It was the boat San Mateo, an Ecuadorian longliner out of the port of Manta. Our inspection was halted, and the ship was released by the order of the Navy. No reason was given. The ship was released immediately without investigation after a phone call from Admiral Vega, who was at the moment having drinks with the owner of the arrested fishing vessel. Following that, the boat the Dilson, an Ecuadorian longliner also out of the port of Manta, stopped by the Serenian with 1,500 shark fins and 300 shark bodies aboard. The Navy ordered the ship released with its illegal cargo. The Galapagos National Park nonetheless moved for sanctions. The Navy refused to allow the National Park to sanction the Dilson. The Gaviota, another Ecuadorian longliner out of the port of Manta, had previous public pressure on the officials over corruption's payoff, as the Gaviota is released but has a tender boat and the catch confiscated and receives an official National Park sanction backed by the Navy. Another boat, the Marie Cody, previously arrested by the National Park, convicted and ordered confiscated, had the order overturned by the appeals court. The ship was released after being held for 2 years and was allowed to return to the mainland. Upon reaching the mainland, the Marie Cody was found to have suffered irreparable engine damage due to a chemical abrasive that had been put into the engine prior to departure from the Galapagos. That boat is not expected to return to fishing in the near future. Another boat, the Canela II, a Costa Rican longliner out of the port of Point Arenas, this vessel was ordered confiscated by the court, and this order was upheld by the Court of Appeal. Barring direct interference by naval authorities, the ship will be auctioned. This is a legal precedent. Never before in Ecuadorian legal history has a fishing boat been ordered confiscated for illegal fishing. This marks the first significant punishment for poachers. Another boat, the Indio I, a Costa Rican longliner, also out of Punta Arenas. At first, the Navy did not want to investigate this vessel. Sea Shepherd volunteer Jill Kincaid was on the Serenian and insisted that the vessel be checked out. When the Navy officer on board refused, she contacted the director of the National Park. He ordered the boarding. The Indio I was found to have been wanting for previous violations for defacing the National Park by painting the name of their ship on a rock face in the park. The Indio One is presently being detained along with her crew to await trial. And we'll get back to more news, but first we're going to take a little musical break.
Across the frontier to your door. All of my life I have been learning the smell of the planet burning. I surprise here to your door. Out on the drunk line, looking into the abyss, where a ghost of a chance is a thing not to miss. Keep an ear to the east, you will hear me. Thank you for keeping your spirit near me. So the coyotes and I are singing to a ghost of a chance, hope eternal spring and out of the prairie and into the wind to find you. Carrying only this message of love from the earth and the sky and the hawk and the dove. We all love you and we wanted to remind you. Look to the stars, hear through the dissonance. There are voices crying out on the ghost of a chance, and the ghost of a chance will have to carry us through. And I'm gonna raise my voice and sing out across the prairie, over the desert, into the mountains, out to the shore. A ghost of a chance is all across the frontier to your door. This message of hope across the frontier to your door.
And Earth First Radio will be right back, so stay tuned.